Welcome to Mind Walk, produced at Upstart Radio for Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Radio Free Moscow, IndieMedia.org, RadioForAll.net, community and micropower stations worldwide.
Hate film comments against Muslims aired on WMAL Radio yesterday during the Jerry Klein Show. It turns out a trick Klein pulled is winning him high praise from activists in the Muslim community.
That's because Klein was essentially spoofing his listeners into believing that he was a bigot so he could later call them out.
Klein says this discussion about Muslims began as he was talking about the Muslim imams who were kicked off of a flight last week. But instead of just talking about it, he decided to go one step further, knowing full well his comments would spark a lively and disturbing debate.
And if we are at war, then we need to know who the enemy is amongst us.
WMAL talk show host Jerry Klein says as hard as it was, he intentionally spewed words most would consider hateful. Klein says he was trying to point out the absurdity of thinking in extremes, and the phones immediately lit up.
You're pretty much off your rocker. I mean, it's true that 99% of terrorists are Muslim, but 99% of Muslims aren't terrorists.
But others...
I want to come down there and congratulate you for some sensibility.
Like this guy in Maryland said Klein's words were right on target.
Not only do you tattoo them in the middle of their forehead, you round them up and then ship them out of this country, period.
That call is followed by another.
I don't think you go far enough. I mean, you have to set up encampments like they did during World War II, like with the Japanese and Germans.
The question in my mind was, at what point do I say enough?
That moment came a half hour later.
To have you take me seriously is disgusting.
I think it was a very courageous use of parody to draw out anti-Muslim bigots and expose them and ridicule them.
If this is happening, if it's beginning to get a toehold, then it's incumbent on people like me and you to say, hold on, not in my country.
Bored.
Hey, do you mind? I'm listening to the radio.
But I'm bored. Why aren't you listening to me?
Because I am listening to the radio.
The radio! Yo, hey. Drone.
My name is Ted. From accounting.
Well, then you should know how to launch the 10 gigawatt emergency radio beacon.
No, not really, sir. I'm Ted from accounting.
And I've heard great things, Kevin. Now less lip and more launch.
All right, okay. You're the boss. The beacon is on the surface, sir. Are we cool here?
Full power! Juice that baby all the way up, Cedric.
What's in the red now, sir? It's, you know what I'm talking... It's in the red. I'm from accounting...
No, I don't.
Gingrich was the featured speaker at the annual Mackie S. Loeb First Amendment Award Dinner in Manchester, New Hampshire last night, where he not only argued that campaign finance reform and the separation of church and state should be rethought because they allegedly hurt the First Amendment, but he also suggested that new rules might be necessary to stop terrorists using freedom of speech to get out their message. Here is his rationalization.
My prediction to you is that either before we lose the city, or if we are truly stupid after we lose the city, we will adopt rules of engagement that use use every technology we can find to break up their capacity to use the internet, to break up their capacity to use free speech, and to go after people who want to kill us, to stop them from recruiting people before they get to reach out and convince young people to destroy their lives while destroying us.
If you're going to destroy freedom of speech, Bob, you've already lost all the cities. To paraphrase Pastor Martin Niemöller's poem about Germany in the 30s and 40s, first they came for the Fourth Amendment, then they came for habeas corpus, then they came for free speech, and there was no one allowed to speak up. The politics in a moment. First, to discuss the constitutionality of this, I'm joined by George Washington University law professor and constitutional law expert, Jonathan Turley. Jonathan, as always, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks, Keith.
So the conventional wisdom on this is he's trying to breathe life into the same scare tactics that worked so well for the president and the vice president until 4 weeks ago. But could this be more nefarious than just politics? Could any president really gut free speech in the name of counterterrorism?
They could. I mean, it's bizarre it would occur at a First Amendment speech. God knows what he'd say at a Mother's Day speech. But, you know, this really could happen. I mean, the fact is the First Amendment is an abstraction. And when you put up against it the idea of incinerating millions of people, there will be millions of citizens that respond like some Pavlovian response and deliver up rights. We've already seen that. People don't seem to appreciate that you really can't save a constitution by destroying it.
We asked Mr. Gingrich's office for the full speech. To their credit, they provided most of it to us late relative to our deadline. But let me read you a little bit more of this that we've just gotten, Jonathan. I want to suggest to you that we right now should be impaneling people to look seriously at a level of supervision that we would never dream of if it were not for the scale of this threat. That's one quote. This is a serious long-term war, Gingrich added, and it will inevitably lead us to want to know what is said in every suspect place in the country. It will lead us to learn how to close down every website that is dangerous. Jonathan, are there not legal methods already in place to deal with such sites that do not require what Mr. Gingrich has here called supervision that we would never dream of?
Well, there are plenty of powers and authorities that can be used to monitor truly dangerous people. But what you see here, I think, is the insatiable appetite that has developed among certain leaders for controlling American society. We saw that with John Ashcroft not long after 9/11, when he said the critics were aiding and abetting the terrorists. There is this insatiable appetite that develops when you feed absolute power to people like Gingrich. And people should not assume that these are just going to be fringe candidates and this could never happen. Fear does amazing things to people, and it can cause a sort of self-mutilation in a democracy where we give up the very things, the very rights that define us, and theoretically the very things that we are defending.
So, and also, when you talk about closing down internet sites, who is the one who's going to decide which those are? I mean, it could be the Daily Coast, it could be Citizens for Legitimate Government, it could be the sports website Deadspin, for all we know, if he doesn't like any one of them in particular.
Well, what these guys don't understand is that the best defense against bad ideas like extremism and terrorism is free speech. That's what we've proven. That's why they don't like us, is that we're remarkably successful as a democracy because we've shown that really bad ideas don't survive in the marketplace unless you try to suppress them, unless you try to keep people from speaking. Then it becomes a form of martyrdom. Then you give credence to what they're saying.
Last question, the specific idea about the internet. There was a story just today out of Toronto that researchers at a Canadian university developed some software that will let users in places like China that have internet restrictions, the phrase they use was hop over government's internet firewalls. Might it be that the technology will be our best defense against the Newt Gingriches of this country?
It may be. We may have to rely on our own creativity to overcome the inclinations of people like Newt Gingrich.
George Washington University law professor and constitutional law expert, and I think it's fair to say friend of the Constitution, Jonathan Turley. Great, thanks, John.
Thanks, Keith.
All right, sea monkeys, this is Howlin' Mad Murphy. You can run, but you can't hide, because I am live and worldwide with 10 gigawatts of radio waves that won't behave, and you can't ignore me anymore, people. I will be heard.
With a name!
They would come into your town. We ain't here to mess around.
Captain Murphy, I...
Shh! Coming out! All right, sea monkeys. You're on the prowl with Howlin' Mad Murphy. So get your fig nuts on.
Fig nuts!
Hey, jerk face, you don't just barge into the booth when I'm on the air.
Booth? Wait a second. Are you using the emergency beacon to run a pirate radio station?
Ah, crap. Listen, fig nuts. The tour is either in the commissary bin now or in the Howlin' Mad gift shop.
Right. Two things. One, you're sucking up all the power. And two, if the FCC finds out...
So some shrivelly bureaucrats make me pay a stupid fine. Big deal.
I see you're not familiar with their new tactics, which are unspeakably wicked.
The scanner's going off, Captain. We've picked up a pirate radio signal.
Yo, lock in on it, son. Here at the FCC, it's our job to eliminate illegal radio stations and inappropriate language.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for the f***ing backstory.
But you watch your f***ing mouth, you f***ing...
Ooh, how can I put this? You, sir.
Painting walls isn't enough for Banksy anymore. A graffitied elephant, the star of this American show. Not even LA has seen anything like this before. Some of the classic street art, which has made him famous all over the world. Famous and yet unknown. All we know is that Banksy comes from Bristol. We don't know if this is him, or this, or this. And America loves the mystery man with a political message.
I think LA will get the joke, will understand. I think, you know, the nice thing, the clever thing about Banksy's work is it's very simple and approachable, yet profound.
America's foreign policy is savaged in spray paint. The camouflaged elephant that blends in with the wallpaper is supposed to represent big world issues like poverty that we fail to notice. But much of this Tinseltown exhibition deals with the cult of celebrity. There's a grotesque parody of a pregnant Britney Spears. CDs by the it girl Paris Hilton are defaced and left for cockroaches.
But his criticism of the Hollywood establishment doesn't seem to have put off the Hollywood establishment. Over the next few days, some of the industry's biggest stars are expected to come down to this disused warehouse in a dangerous part of LA.
His work can now be seen all over the city, but not everyone appreciates his efforts.
Vandalism. Straight up vandalism.
Neighborhood groups fear Banksy may now inspire other street artists to spray away, and they might be right to worry.
He is actually my favorite artist, and what I love about Banksy is that he actually thinks about the message that he's putting out to the public.
Earlier this week, Banksy put an effigy of a Guantanamo Bay prisoner inside Disneyland, and his people promise more of the same, from the guerrilla artist who likes to shop, but who hides his face so he doesn't get caught.
Subversive graffiti artist Banksy, whose works are usually found adorning the streets of London and Bristol, has now created 9 spray paintings on the controversial barrier which separates Israel from Palestine. Channel 4 News has exclusive footage of the artist's work.
is the first time pictures of the famously camera-shy stencil artist have been shown on television, filmed in a way that hides his identity. His stunts are notorious, he's often political. Here in Abu Dis, on the edge of Jerusalem, Israel's security fence effectively cuts off this part of the Palestinian territories from the rest. Israel argues the wall protects it from suicide attacks. Banksy says it turns Palestine into the world's largest open prison. And in that arch way he often adopts on his website, points out the planned 700 kilometers of concrete make it the ultimate graffiti artist's holiday destination. He told us,
"The segregation wall is a disgrace. The possibility I find exciting is you could turn the world's most invasive and degrading structure into the world's longest gallery of free speech and bad art. Besides, I love Palestine. All the giant walls, the dirt and the falafel stalls remind you of Glastonbury."
Speed perhaps meant he got away with it. Those pre-prepared images and stencils he uses. It's reported there was the odd Israeli gun pointed at them and shots in the air, but the images are still there.
It must have just been the sheer size of the wall. It's like a blank canvas to an artist. That's like a red rag for a bull. You're going to want to cover it in work. Also, it may be a publicity stunt in a way, but to have a politically repressive situation to react against is enormously important for many artists. It gives them something to react against, something to give energy, meaning, importance to their work.
And that's a good thing. each of us can do something.
Do the right thing.
That's not asking too much.
It is the time for new beginnings. Always seeing the tunnel. At the end of the tunnel. And email your old dad once in a while, will you?
That is reasonable. We love you and we do not want to lose you.
Times are tough.
Help a neighbor in need.
Repair bridges.
And keep the peace.
Join in this important cause. No people on earth yearn to be oppressed.
Living side by side.
Disarm for the name of peace.
Forgiveness. Peace. And sacrifice.
Fair play.
Now is the time. Tolerance.
Help someone in need.
Do something.
It is the time for new beginnings. Always seeing the tunnel at the end of the light.
And that's a good thing.
Each of us can do something.
Do the right thing.
Thank you and good evening.
Free speech, failed speakers, and the delusions of grandeur. This is a serious long-term war, the man at the podium cried, and it will inevitably lead us to want to know what is said in every suspect place in the country. Some in the audience must have thought they were hearing an arsonist give the keynote address at a convention of firefighters. This was the annual Loeb First Amendment dinner in Manchester, New Hampshire, a public cherishing of freedom of speech in the state with the two-fisted motto, live free or die. And the arsonist at the microphone, the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, was insisting that we must attach an on-off button to free speech. He offered the time-tested excuse, trotted out by our demagogues since even before the Republic was founded. Widespread death of Americans in America, possibly at the hands of Americans. But updated now to include terrorists using the Internet for recruitment and result, quote, losing a city. The colonial English defended their oppression with words like those, and so did the slave states, and so did the policemen who shot strikers, and so did Lindbergh's America First crowd, and so did those who interned Japanese Americans, and so did those behind the Red Scare, and so did Nixon's plumbers. The genuine proportion of the threat is always irrelevant. The fear the threat is exploited to create becomes the only reality. We will adopt rules of engagement that use every technology we can find, Mr. Gingrich continued, about terrorists, formerly communists, formerly hippies, formerly fifth columnists, formerly anarchists, formerly redcoats, to break up their capacity to use the Internet, to break up their capacity to use free speech. Mr. Gingrich, the British broke up our capacity to use free speech in the 1770s. The pro-slavery leaders broke up our capacity to use free speech in the 1850s. The FBI and the CIA broke up our capacity to use free speech in the 1960s. It is within those groups where you would have found your kindred spirits, Mr. Gingrich, those who had no faith in freedom. No faith in this country, and ultimately, no faith even in the strength of their own ideas to stand up on their own legs without having the playing field tilted entirely to their benefit. It will lead us to learn, Gingrich had continued in New Hampshire, how to close down every website that is dangerous, and it will lead us to a very severe approach to people who advocate the killing of Americans and advocate the use of nuclear and biological weapons. That we have always had a very severe approach to these people is insufficient for Mr. Gingrich's ends. He wants to somehow ban the idea, even though everyone who has ever protested a movie or a piece of music or a book has learned the same lesson. Try to suppress it, and you only validate it. Make it illegal, and you make it the subject of curiosity. Say it cannot be said, and it will instead be screamed. Whatever dreams of internet censorship float like a miasma in Mr. Gingrich's personal swamp, whatever hopes he has of an iron firewall, the simple fact is, technically, they won't work. As of tomorrow, they will have been defeated by a free computer download. Mere hours after Gingrich's speech in New Hampshire, the University of Toronto announced it had come up with a program called Siphon to liberate those in countries in which the internet is regulated, places like China and Iran, where political ideas are so barren and political leaders so desperate that they put up computer firewalls to keep thought and freedom out. The Siphon device is a relay of sorts that can surreptitiously link a computer user in an imprisoned country with another computer user in a free country. The Chinese think their wall still works, yet the ideas, good ideas, bad ideas, indifferent ideas, pass through that wall anyway, the same way the Soviet bloc was defeated by the images of Western material bounty. If your hopes of thought control can be defeated, Mr. Gingrich, merely by one computer whiz staying up an extra half an hour and devising a new firewall hop, what is all this apocalyptic hyperbole for? Well, Mr. Gingrich, what is more massively destructive than trying to get us to give you our freedom? And what is someone seeking to hamstring the First Amendment doing, if not fighting outside the rules of law? And what is the suppression of knowledge and freedom, if not barbarism? The explanation, of course, is in one last quote from Mr. Gingrich from New Hampshire and another quote from him from last week. I want to suggest to you, he said about these internet restrictions, that we right now should be empaneling people to look seriously at a level of supervision that we would never dream of if it weren't for the scale of the threat. And who should those empaneled people be? Funny I should ask, isn't it, Mr. Gingrich? I am not running for president, you told a reporter from Fortune magazine. I am seeking to create a movement to win the future by offering a series of solutions so compelling that if the American people say, I have to be president, it will happen. Who among us can look into our own histories or those of our ancestors who struggled to get here or who struggled to get freedom after they were forced here and not tear up when we read Frederick Douglass's words from a century and a half ago? Freedom must take the day. Who among us can look to our collective history and not see its turning points, like the Civil War, like Watergate, like the Revolution itself, in which the right idea defeated the wrong idea on the battlefield that is the marketplace of ideas? But apparently there are some of us who cannot see that the only future for America is one that cherishes the freedoms we won in the past, an America in which we vanquish bad ideas with better ideas, in which we fight for liberty by having more liberty and not less. What a dark place your world must be, Mr. Gingrich, where the way to save America is to destroy America. I will awaken every day of my life thankful I am not with you in that dark place. And I will awaken every day of my life thankful that you are entitled to tell me about it, and that you are entitled to show me what an evil idea lurks there and what a cynical mind, and that you are entitled to do all that thanks to the very freedoms you seek to suffocate. Good night and good luck.
This has been Mind Walk, an Upstart Radio production.